Hello, and welcome back to the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast. This is episode 27, I think. My name is Eric Harlock, and a couple of weeks ago, I told you about this USDA Industrial Hemp public commenting and listening session that they were going to have last week on March 13th. So they had it, and I've gone through it, listening to it, so you don't have to. And today's show is essentially going to be like a highlights reel, because there were people from all over, from state agencies to lobbying groups to industry groups, a surprising number of Native American tribes. The session was led by the Ag Marketing Service Administrator, Bruce Summers, and he wants you to know this right off the bat.
It's USDA's intention to issue regulations in the fall of 2019 and hopefully to accommodate the 2020 planting season.
Yeah, hopefully to accommodate the 2020 planting season. So if your state didn't have a pilot program, then it's going to be slow for you. This is going to be a slow ramp for you. But states who had a pilot program, you guys are further along. Okay, so Bruce Summers is joined by Sonia Jimenez. She's the Deputy Administrator for Specialty Crops. And she leads the team at AMS and the USDA that's going to implement these decisions. He's also joined by Dr. Patty Bennett. She's the Director of Marketing Order and Agreements Division. She and her team will be writing the regulations. And then the whole thing is moderated.
I'm Ashley Garrigus, and I'll be moderating today's session.
Yeah, like that. And the first guest that they call up is from Pennsylvania.
Our first speaker is Fred Strathmeyer.
Right, so that's our Deputy Secretary for Plant Industry and Consumer Protection right there. But there were some technical difficulties.
Sorry, I don't have a Fred Strathmeyer on the list yet. If you are Fred Strathmeyer, please raise your hand so we can identify your line.
So I think it's cool that Pennsylvania was first. So I don't know how that happened, but whoever was responsible for that, good job. Well done. So next up was Samantha Bruner from North Dakota.
Hello, I'm submitting comments on behalf of North Dakota Agriculture Commissioner Doug Goring. North Dakota has been a leader in pushing for the ability to grow industrial hemp for many years.
And she immediately gets into like a state's rights issue. Check this out.
As USDA moves forward, we would like to see rules that adhere to the intent of the Farm Bill. With any federal regulation, the best approach is to allow the states to work cooperatively with the federal government with minimal framework. This is a great example of cooperative federalism and how it would allow states the freedom to tailor hemp program production oversight to what works best in their state and with their constituents.
Cooperative federalism. They're just going for big ideas right out of the gate. Way to go, North Dakota. But apart from political science point of views, she also had a hemp industry point of views, most notably this one.
An area that could be improved is the current system for importing hemp seed into the United States. This system currently requires a DEA import permit and will likely cause many issues with commercial growers. We would recommend that the restrictions on importing hemp seed be changed now for the 2019 growing season to allow better import of those seeds rather than waiting another season for the USDA to generate rules.
So this makes sense because North Dakota borders Canada, and so there's a ton of business going back and forth there, and the easier it is to do business, the more business is done, right? That's their thinking. And then so next up is Sarah Walling. She's from Wisconsin's Department of Agriculture. And she kind of sums up their program, the hemp program, and you know she complains about the weather and this and that, typical farmer stuff. But then also as a typical hemp farmer, she brings up the chicken and the egg.
We're also optimistic about the future of hemp as an agricultural crop, but we're in a chicken and egg process, which comes first, the processing or the production. The interest in the second year indicates that the growers can certainly deliver if they have processing markets to feed into.
So I guess they're going full chicken now or full egg. I'm not sure which way they're going, but sounds like Wisconsin has something going on. And then Pennsylvania was back. They found Fred.
I do have Fred now joined. Fred, we're going to allow you to talk. And Fred, you'll be able to unmute at the bottom left-hand corner, please.
Yes, we're good. Thank you.
Oh, so they're still having some technical difficulties, but then they finally get it figured out. But still, the signal isn't quite strong enough, and you can't really hear Mr. Strathmeyer too well.
Okay, good afternoon. I'm Deputy Secretary Fred Strathmeyer of the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture. On behalf of Pennsylvania Secretary of Agriculture, Russell Rennie.
So thankfully, USDA not only provided the recording of the session, they also provided a really well done written transcript. So I was able to just go through and see what he was talking about because the audio wasn't so great. So basically, he goes through the Pennsylvania pilot program point by point, talking about how they're seeking to classify hemp as a control plant. He talks about application compliance and what the permit holder has to do. He talks about information maintenance. And then they also say that PDA does not recommend planting within 3 miles of a planting for CBD or certified seed production. Okay, so they're trying to establish sort of boundaries around varieties.
Planting,
that's interesting.
Not be done within 3 miles of planting CBD or for certified seed production, as doing such could lend legal challenges for existing growers.
So I wonder if that would set up different growing regions within, you know, southeastern Pennsylvania. Like southern Lancaster would become known for, you know, the fiber plants, while eastern Lancaster County would be known as, you know, the CBD area. So, you know, we can sort of watch the development of culture based on policy. And then, so speaking of culture, next up is Missouri.
My name is Paul Bailey. I'm the director of the Plant Industries Division at the Missouri Department of Agriculture.
So these public comments from the states are interesting to me because they're like these little sales pitches. Like, here is how we set up our laws. You should adopt our laws so we don't have to change.
We are taking a unique approach that will require growers to self-sample each variety of industrial hemp that is planted and to send their samples directly to an independent testing laboratory.
There you go. That sets up ancillary business for testing facilities. And then ultimately, they just want to trust their farmers.
We believe that growers can adequately monitor their crops and submit necessary reports to the department.
Yes, because farmers love paperwork. After Missouri comes Colorado and the Agriculture Commissioner, Kate Greenberg.
Colorado has been and will remain a leader in hemp production. We have realized the benefits of hemp and embraced the crop as an economic driver for the state of Colorado. It has attracted researchers, investors, and entrepreneurs who have devoted their time and resources to advance this industry. Since the passage of the 2014 Farm Bill through 2017, Colorado accounted for more than half of the nation's industrial hemp production. As of 2018, Colorado is home to 835 licensed producers, 1,200 registered land areas, and over 31,000 outdoor acres and 100 indoor acres of licensed cultivation space. We also launched the first certified hemp seed program in the U.S. and hired the first industrial hemp certified seed specialist in the country to give growers greater confidence in the quality of their seed. With the passage of the 2018 Farm Bill, a number of issues that impact American farmers and businesses remain to be addressed at the federal level. It is imperative that we receive clear direction from the USDA as to how to proceed in order to provide certainty to the industry and create a level playing field for all states. We need to create standardized protocols for the collection and analysis of hemp samples, disparities in sample preparation and analysis, marginalized test results, resulting in material that is non-compliant in one state becoming a marketable commodity in another, and vice versa. In addition, we need nationally accepted transportation solutions for the safe and efficient movement of hemp and hemp products. It is critical that our agencies and law enforcement work together efficiently on this matter. A certified seed system that addresses normal certified seed production, including THC levels, must be developed and enforced. Enforcing the federal seed law is increasingly important. It is also critical that hemp producers receive equal access to agricultural financial services, including federal grant matching funds, that should be made available to increase research, development, and processing. The hemp industry will also see an increase in grain production for human and animal consumption, and regulations will need to reflect that emerging industry. FDA rulings should also recognize hemp and its derived products as safe and acceptable in the market and should work to validate label claims of CBD products. Colorado is and will remain a leader for businesses to build the hemp economy. From university research to farm equipment manufacturing, we are all in on hemp. We urge USDA to move quickly on this to ensure clarity for the industry, and we are excited to work with you and other federal partners, as well as stakeholders across Colorado and the U.S., to treat hemp as any other agricultural crop and find business and consumer-friendly regulatory solutions. Thank you very much.
So there you go. In less than 3 minutes, she hits all the nails on all the heads. And then we start to hear from Kentucky. Courtney Moran, she's a cannabis lawyer.
I had the privilege of working pro bono with the offices of Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and Senator Ron Wyden on the drafting of the Hemp Farming Act of 2018. The language included in the 2018 Farm Bill legalizing hemp, providing me with firsthand knowledge of congressional intent.
So her main concerns are banking and transportation.
Section 10114 provides that nothing in the horticultural title of the 2018 Farm Bill prohibits the interstate commerce of hemp or hemp products and further prevents states and tribal governments from prohibiting the transportation of hemp or hemp products through the state or the territory. However, we continue to learn of hemp crop and product seizures by law enforcement for simple transportation of the commodity. As a result, many trucking and shipping companies are not offering hemp business owners shipping services. While the U.S. Postal Service has created a pathway, the industry needs USDA to develop clear guidance for the transportation of hemp to discourage states and local law enforcement from interfering with shipments of hemp and hemp products that were legally produced in another state. Another issue that needs immediate attention is access to banking with financial institutions. The industry requests the USDA to work in collaboration with the Department of Treasury in issuing guidance to alleviate issues regarding access to banking for legal hemp businesses.
These are all good points. And then we stay with Kentucky and we hear from somebody who sounds like he should be argumentative, but he's not, Ryan Quarles.
Hello, this is Kentucky Commissioner of Agriculture Ryan Quarles, and I want to say that Kentucky is glad to be at the table on this call.
Right, so then he goes into a brief history of hemp in Kentucky, and then he talks about the pilot program and then how they're going to have like 50,000 acres of hemp in Kentucky this year. But then he gets to his concerns.
Industrial hemp has several concerns as we begin to move towards commercialization. First, it is a concern that involves the financial sector. Too often we hear that lending institutions are fearful of granting a loan to hemp-related entity for fear of liability. We should work to correct that misperception. These farmers and companies need access to capital just like any other farmer or agribusiness. The second concerns involvement with the FDA. We need clear, common sense guidance from the FDA and maybe even Congress about what the FDA plans to do about CBD and other derivatives of industrial hemp. This is where Kentucky's hemp program has been focused in generating these nutraceuticals, supplements, and oils. If the FDA regulates too hard against CBD, it would really harm small Kentucky family farmers. We've got to develop rules that allow our farmers an opportunity to continue exploring this crop and benefiting economically from it, especially during a period of depressed farm cash receipts. The last thing I would like to say is that we would recommend USDA develop uniform THC testing standards and background checks that are consistent on a national level.
All right, there you go. Banking, testing, and regulation or over-regulation. They want to protect their CBD industry, and they want the FDA to stay out of their way, I would guess. Then we heard from a guy, he's the executive director of the Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance, who has concerns about cops mistaking hemp for pot, and that also drug traffickers are going to smuggle their drugs in the bales of hemp. And then after him, we heard from Angie Kennedy with a concern that I had no idea. I did not see this one coming.
Hi, this is Angie Kennedy. I come from the Seneca Nation of Indians. My question has to deal with today about clarification on how tribes and sovereign nations can participate in the 2019 planting season.
All right, so it sounds like tribes are in this legal purgatory where the Farm Bill says that states, tribes, and institutes of higher education can continue operating under the authority of the 2014 Farm Bill, but the 2014 Farm Bill does not clarify that tribes can grow hemp. And so she's concerned that this won't get sorted out in time for this year's growing season.
We were just looking for clarification on those regulations for the 2014 Farm Bill.
So this looks like a pretty big oversight in the language of the law here. And, you know, with a view on history, are you really surprised that they forgot about the Native American tribes? And so Administrator Summers realizes this is a problem, and then he says,
so we will follow up post this this webinar session on that issue with you and add that to our website as well.
This won't be the last tribal issue that you hear of during this listening session. Right, so you hear from tribes, you hear from state departments of agriculture, you hear from different industries. There was somebody from the Food Marketing Institute representing the supermarket industry. And, you know, of course, the cannabis industry is here in full force. For example, here's Wendy Mosher. She's the CEO of New West Genetics.
New West is a leader in hemp genetics. We're located in Colorado and began our breeding program in 2014. We use modern genomics and traditional breeding to create proprietary, stable, and most importantly, compliant hemp seed genetics. Our main hope for the industry is that we enact regulations that adhere to typical agricultural industry practices, smart, consistent regulation of THC levels, and regulations around the validation of end product claims. We believe adopting Colorado's solutions around seed genetics and IOSCA seed certification will be the best path forward. We support the mandate of certified seed use only, and we recommend consideration of a regulated breeder system akin to the regulations in Canada. We look forward to the State Departments of Agriculture as well as tribal nations to adopt consistent regulations in all aspects of the hemp industry pipeline, especially in regard to THC level testing and validation. The state of Colorado has an exemplary protocol for testing THC that we hope will be adopted nationally. Furthermore, because hemp planting seed labeling has not yet been regulated, many farmers have been left with fields of seed that have not germinated and or have failed to perform as described, resulting in significant financial loss for farmers. In the interest of farmers and cultivators knowing what they are buying, we look forward to the enforcement of the Federal Seed Act.
So it's like companies and industries are all trying to sell themselves or their ideas or their services to the USDA. It's like a big job interview. So maybe there's a ton of government contracts up for grabs. I don't know. Here's an example of like a sales pitchy presentation from somebody from the National Accreditation Board.
If the USDA does indeed to develop a scheme or wish to develop a scheme or program, ANAB is willing to help with this development or illustrate how accreditation fits into such a scheme. The specificity of the scheme requirements is at the discretion of the scheme owner, in this case, the USDA.
So he just said scheme like three or four times. That to me is a red flag. Then we start to hear from folks out on the West Coast, out in the Pacific Northwest, mostly talking about testing and deviation in testing results and how that affects interstate commerce and transportation. We hear from Jessica Wasserman. She's a lawyer that represents the Pacific Northwest hemp industry.
Hemp is a biomass, and testing results will vary according to when the hemp is tested. USDA must set a testing date that is reasonable, so that once the product is certified on that date, certification is final without retesting.
Then we hear from the chief science officer at Greenleaf Labs, which is a cannabis company in Portland, Oregon. And he goes deeper into the science behind the THC, Delta 9, and all that stuff, and how that affects testing and transportation.
One of the biggest points of confusion that we've seen here in Oregon is the discrepancy between the amount of Delta 9 THC versus the total THC found in both plant material as well as finished product. The total THC calculation assumes a complete transfer of THCA into Delta 9. The THCA is what the plant produces in the field, whereas Delta 9 is generally a degradation byproduct produced in low concentrations in the plant. One of the difficulties with this is that while the plant in the field may have legal levels of Delta 9, the total amount of THC that the plant is producing would be significantly greater. Upwards of 30% of the legal cannabis in Oregon would have the potential to be classified as hemp under the only Delta 9 rule as currently incorporated. One of the main issues with that is that as storage and transport of hemp begins to occur, the degradation of THCA into Delta 9 would result in a legal product leaving the state, and by the time it arrives at a destination, it could be illegal as a result of this degradation process.
Imagine that. So testing is also an issue for the Native American tribes. We hear from Patty Marks, who is asking for guidance from the USDA here.
So what we're really looking at here for tribes is the issue of testing. And the loss of this growing season is going to cost jobs and economic opportunities for a number of tribes who desperately need it. We therefore like to encourage the department to issue a temporary guidance that would allow tribes in states where there has not been a pilot program to operate.
So yeah, the Indian tribes deserve to get in on this just like everybody else. And then next up, we hear from Steve Bevin. He's the president of GenCanna Global in, Winchester, Kentucky. Right, and he's got a lot of interesting things to say, but I don't know, is it just me, or does he sound like some eccentric billionaire calling in from his spaceship somewhere.
My name is Steve Bevan. I'm the president of Gymkhana Global in Winchester, Kentucky. We have been a participant in Kentucky's pilot hemp pilot programs with KDA since 2014. We are an example of the success of the program. We're now growing rapidly, have 5 facilities, and employ over 200 people in rural communities. We're aiming to grow over 10,000 acres with our family farming partners in Kentucky in 2019.
Right, so he talks a lot about Gymkhana's work and the low THC or zero THC varieties that they have. But then he really gets into imported hemp versus domestically grown hemp. And he has some good points.
We need to understand the difference between imported and domestic hemp production. And while this seems silly to talk about with on a USDA call, it's important to understand that the U.S. has no real legal framework for understanding for how foreign hemp or cannabis can be imported into the U.S. Rural economics need to drive USDA policy. At Gymkhana, we've increased family farming incomes, we've increased spending in rural communities, and invested well over $100 million so far. And we're accelerating. We need more research with ag universities. They felt constrained so far. We just announced a partnership with Murray State, and we hope to build on our relationship with the University of Kentucky. We need clarity in transportation issues. Kentucky has a great policy. Why not adopt it nationally? We need standards for compliance in hemp products. What is hemp and what does it mean? That means we need testing requirements. We also need a path for labeled chemistry to help farmers farm a very healthy crop.
How much you want to bet he has Mitch McConnell's cell phone number?
Industrial hemp.
Then there's a call from Karen Page. She's asking questions about the global market demand, regulations, and supply readiness. Supplier readiness focusing on the sale of hemp, particularly the fibers. You know, she wants to know what kind of export market is out there.
Where can we find data and prepared research on the global market or its demand for industrial hemp as an export from the United States at no or a reasonable charge?
All right, so the USDA does this for other crops. She wants to know when it's going to happen for hemp. Good question. Okay, moving on. Next, we hear from Nathan Gerhardt. He's the Charlotte Webb Vice President of Regulatory Affairs. His issues, again, are about testing and discrepancies between states. So, all right, we got you covered there. And then we hear from Melissa Leach. She's from Kansas. She's got a question about whether or not, like, hot hemp, you know, hemp that tests too high to be considered hemp, if there could be laws that would allow for turning that material into biochar instead of having it destroyed. That's a good question. We hear from a Garrett Janaki, who is a hemp advisor from California, and he's got something to say about hemp's ability to grow above the 30 degree latitude. And then I think he's trying to sell a product that will alleviate those concerns for those in the southern climes.
So today my hope is to encourage the USDA to look into difficulties that a farmer might face if he or she is in a southern portion of the United States. So what we know about type 3 phenotypes, which is the hemp variety, we know that the specific phenotype prefers a geographical position north of latitude 30.
Then he gets into testing issues, and then I think he tries to sell a product, and then he refers us to his website. So there you go, that guy. Yeah, there's a lot of like salesiness to these calls. I had no idea what this would be like, and it's eye-opening. Then we hear from a banker, Mark Scanlon. He's concerned about the legal risk of financing hemp farmers.
Bankers are getting calls from farmers telling them that they're going to start growing hemp this year as a result of the farm bill. So it sounds like what you're saying is that you're not going to really have anything in place before the 2020 crop year. So it would be appropriate, we think, if you could issue some guidance laying out the groundwork for what will happen if producers try to grow hemp in 2019.
Right. What will happen? Will the bankers lose money? Bankers don't like losing money. So they need guidance. Here's another Indian tribe that needs guidance. This is Ben Fenner, who is representing
the Flandreau Santee Sioux tribe.
And they would like to know
what the federal government's role will be in approving tribal plans, or perhaps even how tribes can implement or adopt a federal plan.
Right. Good question. Lots of good questions today. I hope you have all enjoyed this sort of recap. I've taken a 3-hour information session and boiled it down to about half an hour. I didn't quote everybody, so forgive me if you're disappointed if you didn't hear your favorite hemp activist who you know called in that day. So last but not least, a fellow Pennsylvanian, Judith Castle from Cannabis Law PA. And hey, she mentions Hempfield.
We are based in Pennsylvania, which you probably know, was once in 1729, the actual capital of hemp in the U.S. And we still have a town called Hempfield in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania today.
And she talks about, you know, different grades of the hemp products, you know, medical grade, food grade, that sort of thing. She also gets into, you know, like the distance between varieties. So Cannabis Law PA, Judith, if you're listening to this, maybe you can come on our show and we can talk cannabis law. And then just like that, the listening session was over. Administrator Summers had some closing remarks.
Well, 3 hours. That was an action-packed 3 hours. And I know we started with well over 3,000 participants. I don't know how many are still out there listening, but for those of you that hung all the way to the end, thank you very much.
Yeah, for those of you who hung all the way to the end of this, thank you very much, too. I appreciate it. Hope you learned something. There's just a lot going on in this industry. Oh, hey, so last week I said this week I was going to play the second part of my interview with Bill Roberts, the Perry County beef farmer who's doing hemp research with livestock. Well, I'm going to wait on that because I'm working on scheduling an interview with the scientist that worked on that project with him from PennVet. So stay tuned on that. Okay, so that about does it for today's show. If you have any questions or comments or concerns, please email me at podcast@lancasterfarming.com. My name is Eric Herlock. I'm the digital editor at Lancaster Farming. And until next week, I'll see you in the newspaper. Oh, speaking of the newspaper, I have a story on the front page this week. It's about the 40th anniversary of Three Mile Island. It tells the story of a dairy farmer who was out there in his field farming that morning, March 28th, 1979.
And the neighbor comes across the field to me and says, "Harvey, we're supposed to all get inside, take cover, that there's a problem at TMI."
So it's a neat story. Check it out in the newspaper this Saturday. You can probably find it on our website, lancasterfarming.com, sometime this Friday afternoon, or just check our Facebook page. Okay, so this episode of the Lancaster Farming Podcast is copyright 2019 by Lancaster Farming. Lancaster Farming is part of the Steinman Communications family. Today's show is written and recorded and edited and produced by Eric Herlock, that's me, with lots of help from the USDA. Any music you hear is courtesy of Tin Bird Shadow.